Hey, Redline Radio listeners, you can find us every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hey guys, it's Big Cat and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern for the first time since Rough and Rowdy 1. Every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Chicago sports fans. This is Carl.
This is Dave.
Chief.
Eddie.
This is Red Light Radio and All Gas, No Break Chicago Sports Podcast, brought to you by Barstool Sports Chicago, brought to you by our great friends at Miller Lite. We call this an All Gas, No Breaks podcast. I'll be honest, because it feels like there's a lot of breaks.
Why is there breaks?
There's just a lot going on this week. We got Kevin in town. We got John in town. We got some guys traveling. We got just like a lot of stuff. Big live show this Saturday. I'm sure some people listening are going to be out. KFC radio show.
Yeah.
Just a big week.
Mm-hmm.
Barstool River North. There's a meet and greet on Friday for happy hour.
Happy hour. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of stuff going on.
I don't feel like it is breaks. I feel like it's more gas when those guys are here. I'm feeling gassed up. It's been fun doing stuff with them. So I like when I love those two guys specifically, but I like when we have people from out of town here.
Mm-hmm. Makes the drafts better when you have that fifth chair filled.
Mm-hmm.
Like all, I know it's really, but when this fifth chair, when the one next to me is filled with somebody for a draft, it just hits so much better.
It is better.
It's great.
Everything's better in person, Ed.
Are things better on the south side right now, Dave?
So we are recording this at 3:19 p.m. on Wednesday. They just got done beating the brakes off the Detroit Tigers 13-0. I'm not going to say things are better until they're comfortably in first place. I'm not talking about, oh, they just finally tied the Twins. They're back in first place. No. I'm talking about, like, they're pulling away from the Twins. And the Guardians are sticking around. Detroit's dead. Kansas City's trash. It's a three-team race right now. And the White Sox have the best collection of talent amongst those three teams. Now go and fucking win the division. June 15th, there's 101 games left, I want to say. They're 30 and 31, so there's 101 games left. If they don't win this division by, like, five games, I mean, in the end it doesn't matter, but if they don't take, like, a five-game lead into August, like, into mid-August maybe, like, you fucked up. You fucked up royally, but the good part is there's a good chance that'll happen, I think. So my tune hasn't changed at all. I'm pissed off at a lot of things regarding the White Sox, but they're finally starting to hit. They're getting healthier. Eloy and Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn had his first start on Monday. Little rusty, but that's fine, to be expected. Eloy's back. There's a month and a half until the trade deadline. Win against all these shitbag teams you got coming up after these next two series, which are going to be really telling. So the White Sox just swept the Tigers. You got off day tomorrow on Thursday. Then you got a three-game set at home against the Houston Astros. Or on the road, I'm sorry, against the Houston Astros. Then back in Chicago against the Toronto Blue Jays, who just swept them like a week or 10 days ago or so. So it'll be a good measuring stick. If they win four of those six games, we are happy. If they look like complete dog shit like they did against the Blue Jays when they played them within the last couple of weeks, then we have the same concerns. But I know
you're not doing so intentionally, but I do feel like you're bearing the lead a little bit. I think it kind of starts with your manager, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the big thing of the weekend. That's a big thing. I know they just fucking
Talking about this on the rundown today, because the stories came out that both the Cubs and the White Sox are intentionally, like, state-controlled media, North Korea, Russia type shit, where they're intentionally doctoring footage to make themselves look better. And if anybody from out of Chicagoland was paying attention to the White Sox or Redline Radio, last week, Tony La Russa, he walked Trey Turner of the Los Angeles Dodgers on a 1-2 count in order to get to Max Muncy with a lefty on the mound. Of course, Max Muncy sees that lefty and he goes yard, 3-run lead. That's the ball game. It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. Tony La Russa not only doubled down, but he tripled down. At this point, like, I respect his
Just dig in.
Just dig in more. The more we dig in, the more he digs in. I respect that a little bit. But it's like, dude, you can almost see it in real-time play out. Because, like, one day Lurie Garcia will be batting third, and everyone's like, what the fuck is this idiot doing batting Lurie Garcia third? He is the worst offensive player, probably worst player all around in all of baseball. And then the next game, because, I mean, Garcia has to play a little bit right now. Next game, he'll be batting ninth. You can almost see the front office being like, Tony, this is how it's going to be. Like, we tell you what to do. You just hand the shit over to the umpire, make the moves. But, like, you've lost autonomy to call how you see the game should be called. And the game has passed him by. They're going to have to win in spite of him, in spite of his dumb moves. He had a great career. I don't know why they felt it was necessary to coax him into leaving his retirement and his Hall of Fame career, but they did, and you got to live with it. It fucking sucks because they had a good thing. Everything bad that started happening with this team directly coincided with that hiring. It's like bad karma.
Would you swap him out for Joe Maddon right now?
That's a tough one. Probably not.
What about Ozzie?
Ozzie, 100%. That's just not going to happen.
No, I don't think any of these would happen. I'm just curious. Like
Joe Maddon, no, because I don't like the frill shit. And I don't think that would vibe with this fan base for one and this roster for another. Like that's not them. So that I might be the Anthony Rizzo than. Type guys, which is fine to each their own. But for the White Sox, like, fuck no. Managerial, like, as far as pulling strings, probably. But, I mean, he just got fired, too. So it's like, what, you're picking up the Angels trash and the Cubs trash? Like, get the fuck out of my face. Like,
Do you think he'd do better? Would you hire him?
Yeah, Joe, yeah. Ozzie, I think anybody would be better with Tony at this point. But then it's like the injuries. You know, it's like injuries, you know, uninspired baseball. How much is it the fact they started slow and this is – it's so hard to figure out. Like, 60 games, this. Like, they are 30 and 31. I've said they can go on, like, a massive run. And, like, when that happens, some people will be like, see, Tony just, you know, he didn't press too many buttons. He didn't freak out. Like, he didn't pull the – and he just let the guys play. And
that's how it should be.
It's probably what we're going to say. Make no mistake about it.
They're 30 and 31 right now because of underperformance from Yoel Mankata.
It's fucking brutal.
I mean, the first 2 months, Abreu, a lot of people said, myself included, I'm like, all right, he's 35. He's probably cooked. He just won 4-for-5 today. Granted, it was against pitchers who – pitching that was position players a few times today. But he looks vintage Jose. He's walking at a better pace than he's ever walked in his life. Power's back. He looks great.
See, I think that's a huge story. I think Jose Abreu, like, turning it on, I think is a huge story.
This is – I was going to write something on this eventually because I want to make sure it's the trend stays the same. But Jose Abreu has slowed down a tick. And you could almost watch him from at-bat to at-bat this year completely change his prototypical approach, which is an aggressive hitter. And he was never a hitter that – he always walked at, like, a 7-8% clip, which is, like, league average or so. You'd think for a power hitting first baseman, it was like, you know, 12-13%. He's not that anymore. So he it looks like he actively went out of his way. He's like, you know what? I'm not going to be able to take these pitches an inch or two off the plate and hit them for a double or for a bomb anymore. I'm going to have to start taking those and taking my bases and start hitting pitch because I just don't have the bat speed or the twitch anymore. And he's just taking those pitches, and pitchers are now starting to work more into the middle. I mean, he's still Jose Abreu. He's going to shit on those balls, and that's what he's doing. He looks fucking great.
Keeping the hands close to his body. Watch some old film. Jose Abreu this year, there are some mechanical changes.
He looks,
I saw something on.
Looks awesome good. Right now. Vintage Abreu. Yeah. Now, they're going to have decisions to make with him going into next year because he is a free agent. Roster still has a billion fucking – first base, yeah. DH is on. Like, what do? Do you let Abreu walk? Do you?
I mean, probably, right?
Give him bench code? I don't know. But it's we'll see. I'm in the we'll see mode right now as it sits on June 15th with them being a game under 500 heading into these next two series. Yeah. So we'll see.
That La Russa hire is tough just because he's almost like impossible to hire or to fire.
You can't. No, they can't. They're Rick Hahn physically. Emotionally, spiritually, he cannot fire him.
You could.
It is Jerry Reinsdorf's guy.
Right. But even I'm sure even Jerry doesn't want to fire him.
You know, he can't. Like, they'd be admitting defeat.
Exactly. Right. So, like, if they had hired literally anyone else.
John Heyman had a really good article, actually, in the New York Post or Time. I forget which one he works for now. But usually John Heyman's just like a shill.
Mm-hmm.
Front office
punching
shill.
Punching bag. Long time punching bag on this show.
One of them, yeah. I don't mind him that much.
Bob Nightingale won.
Bob Nightingale, guys.
John Heyman, though, he's like, Tony La Russa, this is, make no mistake about it, this is a Tony La Russa hire, and John Heyman has direct line to Jerry Reinsdorf himself. Everybody knows that. He's like, this was a Jerry Reinsdorf hire, but Jerry Reinsdorf hired him first and foremost because he thought that Tony La Russa was the guy that could bring them a World Series. It wasn't because it was his buddy and he wanted to rectify mm-hmm. mistake. That was all secondary. For when he fired him in 86 or whatever it was. So, I mean, the hire in hindsight, like, he's getting worse.
Yeah.
He really is getting worse. Like, just.
But don't you think if any other man, they had hired anyone else last offseason, they would have fired him at this point in the season?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Like, Without question. Yeah. Without question.
I mean, they didn't fire. What did it take for them to fire Ozzie? They held out of Robin Ventura for so long.
Yeah, but the expectations are true. Different, though.
One in a year and 2-3 months, like, that's...
Ventura,
this
he
city,
replaced
that's
Ozzie.
Way too short.
Yeah, with the injuries and stuff, a Major League... I don't know. They won the division last year. They won, what, 97 mm-hmm. games?
But aren't you... 93 games? Didn't you say one of the biggest problems with them is uninspired baseball? This is like...
I don't think so. It's not that they're not playing hard. It's that they have a roster that's flawed. Which I've said it. I think that a lot of the reason the roster is flawed is because of Tony La Russa. Like,
what do you mean by that?
Because Tony La Russa's influence. Fucking loves Lurie Garcia. Yeah. He loves him. He said it as much. I know you got to take everything that managers or organizations say to the media with a grain of salt. But he's like, to me, Lurie Garcia is not. He's not a utility guy. He's a guy that you play 5-6 days a week all over the field. And that's how he's deployed him throughout the course of his tenure, his mm-hmm. second tenure with the White Sox. It makes no sense. And then it's turn around and give him a 3-year deal when he wasn't even going to get a major league offer from any other team. It just doesn't make sense that he's that to me. And people are like, oh, why? Like Tony La Russa, Tony La Russa spent a decade in the Red Sox and the Diamondbacks front offices after he retired. It's not like he was out of baseball completely. He was like consultant, whatever he yeah. was. He had his hand. Like, a lot of people think that he was the one that butchered the Diamondbacks. A lot of people think it was Tony La Russa because he was like whatever title he had. And it reeks of Tony La Russa and like these just weird lineups where your best hitter, Andrew Vaughn's been just, he's going to be an all-star and he should be an all-star. Andrew Vaughn hitting eighth when Lurie Garcia is hitting first or second. It's like, it does not make sense. So as long as you can, like, and right now the whole lineup, top to bottom, I'd say over the last, like, probably since June started, has really started to click. AJ Pollock has been outstanding. Vaughn's been hitting all year. Robert's been not totally great, but he's been fine. He hasn't been bad. Mankata was bad until today, and then you're pulling up the rear. Danny Mendick, you got to give Danny Mendick a shout-out. He has been nothing short of fan-fucking-tastic in Tim Anderson's absence in the last two, three weeks, whatever he's been on the DL for. Just outstanding defense. He's hitting the ball all over the field. He's hitting for power, too. He's got a couple three bombs in the last couple weeks. Danny Mendick deserves all the shout-outs in the world, and as soon as Tim Anderson's back in the next few days, Danny Mendick should be starting 5-6 days a week at second base until he loses that job, if that even happens. So if like this is my barometer for how serious the White Sox are about winning. As soon as Tim Anderson's activated, Harrison has to be DFA'd. Apparently they love him in the clubhouse and he's just a great presence and they don't want to get rid of him. They want to keep him around. All right, well, if that's the case, then you get Lurie Garcia, you eat that $15 million, get him the fuck out of here. Because Danny Mendick gives you your best shot at winning. He by far and away is the best defender of those three. And he's hitting by far and away the best out of those three. So it's like, if you option Danny Mendick to Charlotte, you are not trying to win right now. You're trying to hope to God that you get something out of those two players that you have signed for $5 million this year. And I don't know. We'll see. That's the theme of my White Sox attitude right now is we'll see.
I got a question, Dave.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Makata, I want to get you going. And I know you're like hesitant because you want to think it'll. And you, like you said, he had a good game today. But I got to get you going.
Fucking little leaguers.
Yeah. We got to get you going.
Castellani.
Don't hold back. This is, I mean, you're with us. You're in a podcast. I know. Yeah. This isn't a tweet where people are going to fucking.
I mean, Yoan Moncada has fucking sucked this year.
Mm-hmm. I saw that. What was it? Three. Did you see that tweet? Someone tweeted. Like batting average, on base percentage, something else. He was dead last amongst
everything. Only got like 50 or 60 plate appearances because he only came back like a month ago.
With everybody who had played that.
No,
it was crazy.
I honestly don't get it. So I'm watching him play. One, I think he might still be hurt. So it was his oblique that shelved him for the first however long of the season. I've never messed up an oblique, but I can't imagine messing up your oblique, yanking it or pulling it or straining it or whatever. I can't imagine that's like a easy injury to get over.
No. Cause
you can't do anything. You just got to let it heal. You know,
I also feel like baseball is probably the worst sport.
Exactly. Cause there's so much torque in your core when you're swinging a bat or throwing a baseball repeatedly. But with him, it's weird because from the right side of the plate, he was fine. He was hitting fine. He just doesn't see a lot of left-handed pitching or as much left-handed pitching. But whenever he was up as a righty, which is historically his weaker half, you're confident that he's going to do at least some damage. From the left side, I'm like, dude, someone tweeted me or DM'd me yesterday. They're like, do you think Moncada has a vision problem? Just like Major League. I'm like, I am honestly willing to try
anything on the table.
Anything. Like, go and get this guy's eyes checked. Like, because he just looks. And it's not like this is the same issue I have for Robert. When Robert's hot, you're like, we're watching the greatest baseball player ever because he, like, physically, he does things that 99.9% of players can't do because he's so physically gifted. But when he's struggling, he just, like, he protects in hitters' counts, meaning, like, he's just trying to, like, make contact on pitches outside the zone in, like, a 2-1 or 2-0, 3-1, 3-2 count, and it drives me fucking insane. I expect more out of Luis Robert. I'm like, dude, someone teach this guy to fucking swing with authority when he's in a hitter's count. Like, try to hit a home run. Try to kill the ball. Moncada does the exact same thing, but he does it every single at-bat. Every single pitch, every single swing. It'll be a 2-0 count. He just waves at the ball, like, praying to make contact. And it'll either be weak contact or it'll swing through it. Today was a little different. Granted, I wasn't watching too closely because we were recording other shit, but he did turn on a home run from the left side, so hopefully that's a sign of things to come. But I don't know. Like, it's a mystery to me. It's a mystery. And they need, like, if Yoan Moncada, Abreu, and Grandal aren't performing at least near their peaks, the team's not doing shit. So, I mean, Grandal started hitting really well within the last week or so. Then, of course, he gets shelved. He's fine, though. Abreu's been hot for a while now. He's normal. And then Moncada hopefully uses this 5-hit game, I think it was today, to kind of pole vault himself into future success because they really need him. If he's not, and not to mention, he starts to get really expensive. He makes $20 million next year and $25 million the year after that. So
yeah.
If he's like the worst player in baseball, I mean, on a Jerry Reinsdorf owned team, that's a lot of dead money.
It's a problem.
You know, that's a problem. So they really, really need him to start hitting. And hopefully today was the start of it. So we will see.
What do you think now that you're paying more of attention from like a national level? Like, I'm sure people have been talking about that, right?
Yeah, I think the Twins just ran through 12. They're playing their 12th hardest game like in a row. And their opening schedule is pretty easy. So if you're a White Sox fan, you're like, well, obviously we got to catch the Twins. You have your eye on the Guardians. And I got a little take on them, but the Twins primarily, obviously, they're in first place. They just went through their hardest part of the schedule. It won't get hard again until like, I think it's like August or like later July. And so they're 6-5 through this 12-game stretch. If you're a White Sox fan, you're going into it like, oh, please, come on, Twins, slow down. Byron Buxton might be the most impactful player. Like,
he was a complete and total dog shit this year until like the last week or so.
He had this year?
Yeah, he was hitting like
Byron Buxton is
Byron like Buxton's hitting 233, 317. He was under 200 like a week ago.
Yeah, what's his slugging?
Slugging 585.
Yeah, astronomically high slugging percentage. His isolated power is probably top of the league, meaning when he's hitting, it's going for extra bases. And he's made an impact on that team that I think is going to keep lingering throughout the season. So if you're a White Sox fan, you want to cheer against the Twins. It's just they're finishing up a two-week stretch where like this was a good time to cheer against them and hope that they stumbled a little bit. They're just solid. If you go look at the Twins lineup, there aren't a lot of like weaknesses and holes where you're going to see like huge slumps. At least they have played like that so far. The other thing with Mankata, it's tough because third base, you need production. If you look at the AL Central, your third baseman at the very worst is like a young guy they're trying to develop. Like Mankata has the ability to be an MVP. It's not like you're trying to play this guy and figure out what he can be. You know what he can be. So you're running a third baseman out there and you're getting such below average production from a position you should be driving in runs. I mean, fuck the Cubs. The Cubs literally got rid of Chris Bryant, went out and found Patrick Wisdom, which isn't to say that's like the expectation for the White Sox. What I'm saying is third base is a position you get offense from. Mm-hmm. Third base is not a position you're like, well, we have lockdown defense at third base. Third base is like, yeah, better play fucking good
defense.
That's
catcher and shortstop, maybe. Yes. Maybe center field.
So those problems with Mankata are exasperated because like he's playing a position where like they need the offense. It's not like you can hang your hat and be like, if Tim Anderson – showed up 1 year and hit 275, but still played great defense and was himself around the field. Like you could work away. You'd be like, well, he's still, if Mankata's not going to play at the top of his level, you're fucked. And then it's frustrating. He's owed $24 million next year, $25 million the year after that. So hopefully it is just an oblique thing.
I think Dave said it well there too, where it's just those three in the lineup. Like that's a third of your lineup. You need those three guys to perform.
Mm-hmm. The other production. Big three highest paid players, yeah. Three highest expectation as far as players are concerned. Like Abreu had a bad 4 or 5 weeks to start the year, but Abreu, he has got, and I say this every year, and I fucking hate that I do it every year, but he's a notorious slow starter. And every year that he starts, so I'm like, this is it. Pito's done. Career's over. And then he just goes on a fucking tear. And he's on a fucking tear right now. And I know I'm sure they're going to give him that 1 year friendly, whatever deal. And next year, it's going to be the same thing. The year after that, it's going to be the same thing. He's earned that right to like be bad for like a whole year before it's like, all right, now he's cooked.
It's a shitty feeling. Like it's 1 year, the car's just not going to start again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So here's the biggest take I ever, I would say like the juiciest thing I have about the White Sox. I think nobody's talking about, like you bring up the White Sox for the last fucking 15, 20 years. And there's one steady, almost nearly steady thing, I should say. People are going to kill me and say, yo, you forgot about this year or this year. But generally speaking, where the White Sox have dominated the competition is getting guys turn them into relievers. Don Cooper could take anybody and turn them into reliever. Now, there's stuff about Don Cooper being a good fit for modern pitching and, Ethan Katz, that's a name. Remember how we talk a lot about Ethan Katz? White Sox Twitter loves Ethan Katz. That's a name. He's probably one of the more like celebrated hitting or pitching coaches in Major League Baseball by their own fan base. It's like, we got Ethan Katz. Where's the bullpen at? Where are the guys where you're like, oh, I haven't heard. Like the White Sox used to just run guys out and they're like, oh, you never heard of this guy, but they found him. Coop's working on a slider.
That turned into like a meme after a while. The Coop will fix him shit. Like that was always said with like very facetiously. Hendricks has been good. Graveman's been good. Joe Kelly hasn't pitched at all. The rest of the guys.
Those are signings. I'm saying like the guys that come up where it's like, oh, we got this guy in the Rule 5 draft.
They used to be an awesome, fine guy organization. They haven't been as much the last couple of years. One of the guys they found was the dude they traded to the Cubs in the Kimbrel trade, but he got Tommy John.
Cody Hoyer.
Cody Hoyer. Matt Foster's been pretty decent this year, but he's like a low leverage six inning guy, and he's forced into eighth inning roles right now because of all the injuries. Speaking of which, Hendricks down for at least 3 weeks, which go fucking figure. As soon as someone gets healthy and someone else is getting hurt.
Do you guys have trade capital?
Yeah, a little bit.
Little though, right?
I mean, Colson Montgomery, their first round pick last year, is absolutely fucking killing the ball. Don't
fucking trade that kid.
No, you don't want to trade him. Exactly. He's going to be like Corey Seager, maybe. But
Like, there's no, not, I know it's not, not Mick or really. Adolfo, but there's no Mick or Adolfo's walking around being like, oh, we could package these.
No, not really. Their farm is pretty barren.
I mean, do you think they're hesitant to trade for a second baseman or other person after last year?
They shouldn't be. They should.
Good answer.
But I mean, if you want to do that, make sure it's the right fucking guy. And if you don't have the trade capital to do that, then you should have fucking opened your goddamn checkbook and went and did that instead of Jen. Oh, hopefully we got Josh Harrison. He's 35 years old. Hopefully he's got something left in the tank. Oh, no. Guess what we're doing? We're talking about how we're going to DFA him in a fucking week when Anderson's back. They're the kings of that. How many fucking times over the years do they try to catch lightning in a bottle with all these old, relatively expensive compared to what the production they bring over the hill players? Like, it has happened for decades, going back to like Ken Griffey Jr., who actually was whatever. He had a big play for in the blackout game. Manny Ramirez, Jose Canseco, fucking.
Kenny Lofton. Juan Pierre.
Rollins.
Jimmy Rollins.
That one's like, probably the worst one.
Why? Yeah. You could add up how much money they've wasted on these guys that they just end up being forced to cut bait with because they are so cooked that you could probably afford Bryce Harper. And there's your fucking, there's your,
yeah.
You know, it drives me insane. And they did it again this year.
Justin Morneau.
Who like didn't have a back at that point?
Like Omar Vizquel.
Omar had a cup of coffee. You guys want to keep going?
This is crazy.
Bobby Alomar played for the White Sox too while we're up the middle.
And Sandy, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sandy played.
Yeah. It's almost
Charles Johnson too. If we're doing late 90s All Star catchers,
Dave. It's almost poetic that they have this young fucking roster.
He's just sitting there shaking his head.
They have this young roster, and then it's just they're now the manager.
But no, here, like we talk about Brian Billick on here. He sent me a tweet when we were recording Dog Walk earlier. It was I'm not going to go and dig it up, but it was basically it was on April 12th. He tweeted this. He goes, Josh Harrison and Lurie Garcia making $10.5 million this year is about the worst allocation of resources you could have when you're on a Jerry Reinsdorf team, when you have Danny Mendick, Yolbert Sanchez, and Rami Gonzalez, and all these guys, and this Lennon Sosa dude who's fucking everybody wants on the major league team right now because he's just killing the ball, and he's only like 23 and has all these tools, and he's all tooled up and everything. It's like, it just makes no sense. And then Danny Mendick gets his chance because of injury, because they had to play him, and he looks awesome. And he is making $750,000 this year, I think it is. It's like, what are you idiots doing? Stop this shit, because it hasn't worked for two decades. Like, it should have been an open competition. Use that $10 million to go pay a starting pitcher or fucking right field, or second base, what something. Something,
filling
something,
in
something.
Real holes.
Fill in real holes instead of just praying and wasting money that way if you're going to operate under a budget. And
have you at all, like, and sorry to bring this back around to Tony, but have you at all, like, thought, well, in this scenario, like, it was fine to walk him in that situation?
No.
Okay.
Do you know what the situation was?
Max Muncy's hitting, like, 150 on the year. He's tough against lefties. I mean, he's not a good matchup against lefties. It's just stupid. Trey Turner's like an MVP candidate. Not candidate,
it was
but MVP caliber player.
He
should have walked him on the first pitch, yeah. Dave, is my
there
point.
You go.
Yeah, right. No,
that's
I know.
Fine. No one would have said a word if you walked him to get to Max Muncy, but it was a 1-2 count.
Yeah, it wasn't a stupid
when you
decision.
Have two strikes
it was he
on
forgot
someone.
To walk him. It's not where Tony was like, I think it's a good idea to walk him on 1-2. Tony was like, we got to walk Turner so we can get to Muncy. And then, like, he caught a fart and tied his shoe and looked up and was like, how many pitches have been through? He's up already? And then just
at
stopped,
that point,
just
then,
like,
fuck it. Hitting with two strikes is, like, the most difficult thing to do in all sports. Because the pitcher has so many options, pitch options, so many location options. And you have to guess right on both of those. And even then, you're not going to put a full swing on it most of the time because you're just trying to make contact to put the ball in play. It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Zero logical reason.
Why'd you wait till
outside? Outside, and I wanted to ask him this. Outside of when
well,
Kevin
just,
Cash,
like, I was
but
just
you
trying
this
to
up
see.
Earlier. Now it's,
I was just trying to see if there was anything that, like,
no,
you know what I mean. Where everyone's like, that's a sailboat.
And
you know what I mean?
If he would have just said, you know what? And granted, I don't remember the swings that Trey Turner was putting on the ball prior to the walk.
I mean,
but if he had like two or three hacks from hell that he just like fouled straight back. And it was like, all right, dude, we got, I think it was Tanner Banks. I forget if it was Banks or Sousa pitching.
Sousa.
So we got Sousa pitching. And the, like, he, like, I don't trust him to hit a corner or an edge. He's going to put one over the plate and Turner's going to fucking hit one to the moon. We got to walk him right now and just get lefty lefty. Still stupid, but I'd be like, I can kind of see the reasoning. Mm-hmm. But Tony's trying to throw out like all these. Do you know what Max Muncy's hitting with two strikes? It's like Max Muncy didn't have two strikes. Trey Turner had two strikes, you fucking idiot. Like we all in the age of the internet have every bit as much access to information as you do.
It's tough.
So he's trying to throw out all these bullshit fucking stats. And it's like, what are you talking about? The way he said it, it almost sounded like he thought that the count was going to transfer, the 1-2 count before the intentional walk was going to transfer to Max Muncy. He's like, do you know what Max Muncy's sitting with two strikes? It's like, Max Muncy didn't have two strikes on him.
Yeah.
The guy before him had two strikes on him. So what are you talking about?
It's crazy, it's
so dumb. That said, three wins in a row, a drubbing today. It was the first time they absolutely just fucking beat the shit out of someone all year, and it felt good. But we'll see.
Is this quote from Lance Lynn real?
Yeah, question though first.
Yeah, sorry.
Let's save that quote. We're going to get to the quote. We're deep White Sox. It only makes sense to give a shout out to our friends over at Section 108. Love those guys.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Chi.com. That's 3CHI.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code BARSTOOL20.
All right, so speaking of sources, what's the source on this Lance Lynn quote, Ed?
Oh, do you want
this is it's a non-story.
With Joe McEwen?
Yeah, it's.
Did you see the quote though?
The steak quote?
Yeah,
yeah.
It was unbelievable.
It was off the cuff like that. That was good.
He said Lance Lynn. He got into it. Joe McEwen in the dugout. Lance Lynn said he was trying to get me going. He kept telling me filet is better than ribeye. I'm more of a ribeye and potatoes guy. He's a filet and like Caesar salad guy. I told him he was wrong, and he went back to coaching third.
See, I think that's a little jab.
Well,
guy like if a Lance Lynn says you're a filet guy, that ain't no Barry and something. He's actually calling me, and he just called Joe McEwen a huge fucking pussy.
Are you guys? Where are you? Let's go around the room. What cut are we?
I mean, cut I keep going back and forth, dude. I want to be a ribeye guy, but it's like too much. I mean, gun to my fucking head, and I don't want to hear Dave come over the top with some fucking tomahawk porterhouse double dip. One
I'm
cut
porterhouse.
Dave. No, Dave, you get one cut. I know it's a cut, but I'm saying, like, I'm taking a strip.
New York strip?
I'm taking the strip.
Okay, Chief.
Oh, I'm ribeye, bone-in ribeye. I'm actually doing that tonight. I went over to Palina Meat Market.
Mm.
I got a new grill, and I'm going to do, like, but it's more of a smoker. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do the reverse sear. You cook it first, then you throw it on the cast iron, sear the bad boy. Nice. It's going to be fucking awesome.
Shout out Dan, George, and Paul, and Jimmy.
And what are you, Dave? Porterhouse?
I'm porterhouse, medium rare, yeah.
I'm a filet. It makes sense that all four of us are different steaks.
Oh, my God. That's a good... Can we get that? I want that on a please graphic or something.
Filet's fine. It's no, excellent. It's just...
What a good social question. What bites cut of meat. Steak are you?
So I started as a filet guy. Then I was trying to get out of it. I was starting to become unhappy with the cut. I tried a bunch of different ones, and then I came back home.
They're all awesome.
Yeah, they're all great. I have to have bone in, though. If I'm like at a steakhouse, I bone in 100% of the time.
So
no matter what, a strip, porterhouse, or
really,
or bone and ribeye.
Sometimes
yeah.
The bone bothers me because
it adds that flavor, though.
It does, but other times it's like you're cutting around it. I feel like sometimes you get more meat if the bone is removed. That could just be a thing in my
Didn't
head.
Didn't Shane tell you that tomahawks are like kind of a scam? Like they're basically charging more
a
for
a porterhouse is a thicker cut bone-in ribeye.
Yeah.
So it's like 3-4 inches thick, and then they don't remove the bone. So it's like it looks cool. Mm-hmm. But
it's like buying the iPhone. I mean, like, of course you can get a better cut, or I'm sure the Android's faster, but like you get the tomahawks, you could like have the picture of the tomahawk. Like I'm making the tomahawk. Maybe not the iPhone's a good analogy, but you understand what I'm saying. It's part of the experience.
Yeah, so. That's all it is.
Yeah. I do that when I'm in a previous life when I'm charging to somebody else. So if like the company's picking up dinner, then I'm getting the tomahawk.
That doesn't apply anymore here?
I hated those guys. So that's how I would do it. If I could, because they would cheap out on so many things. So if I had a client dinner, I would go heavy on the things that I knew that they had to pay for.
That's so funny to me that we all had a different cut.
Yeah. I moved over to Strip once I started making more steaks, just because there's like more consistency in the quality. Yeah. And like a good strip and cutting it and cooking it right with the reverse sear. I've grown into a strip. I was not. I would have put strip last if you asked me a couple of years ago.
See, I disagree with that you get more consistent. I feel like ribeye is probably, or even a filet, if you're buying them, is probably the most consistent, because sometimes you get like those chunks where you have that slab of fat on a strip where it's just like, it's too much. You just can't, chew.
Doesn't a ribeye have a lot of fat?
Yeah,
too,
but ribeye's like a ton of fat.
But it's edible.
I like fat. I like the grizzle.
But
a lot
not,
of it is.
See, I feel like you can't do it on a strip.
I feel like I end up just like trimming a ribeye so much, and then I end up saying goodbye to it.
You like the fat, huh? What about on a prime rib?
A little bit.
The prime rib fat disgusts me.
I was
so
thinking
much.
About doing a rib roast.
That rubber. Just gnaws on it like a dog.
It's got so much flavor.
Does he dip or does he sprinkle
it? He just gnaws on it like he's a puppy. Or a greyhound.
You notice how he just French looks fries. Sickened at the word puppy.
What? Do you eat everything your dog eats, Dave?
Not every. Well, a lot of what my dog eats.
Hey, do you ever sneak a treat?
No.
Never?
Say you're out of three chi and Ace has got some CBD.
I got
in the
dared to eat a dog treat, which is like the little red box dog
treat. The bone, yeah.
Yeah, the little fake cracker bone. It had zero taste.
Really? Not really even nothing. Like a little graham cracker hint?
Not really nothing, yeah.
Interesting.
It wasn't like, it didn't make me throw up or anything, but it just was kind of there. I would liken it to
texture's tough.
Cheerios. Like really grainy, it dried out in my mouth really badly. Just like a mouthful of Cheerios, but yeah, not like Cheerios. With any
sweetening. Is that designed
sweetening.
That way because dogs slobber a lot?
I don't know. Maybe. That'd be actually a good.
You like that?
Brain's well, I mean, thinking. You host a podcast called The Dog Walk. I would hope that you could ask some good dog-related questions in. It's a good question.
Yeah. I think I've had some dog people on before.
Chaps.
Dog walkers.
I actually don't know if I have had a dog walker on.
Nope, not that dog walker.
Oh, I had a dog walk. Yeah.
Yeah.
J-Bones. Interesting.
Yeah.
Good I might meat, go to good, a steak soon.
Good meat. Good
I
meat
went to cut
up.
The other night.
No, did you?
Hey, nice. Speaking of meat, I'll be in Omaha. They have great meat out there. It's one of the things. Like you go in anywhere and it's priced because it's just right there.
Bro, that's like the, I don't know if we should talk about it or not, but the steak company out of Omaha, they must make a killing, huh?
It's great branding.
Yeah.
I mean, who else is doing what they're
doing? I've gotten them before. That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I know other people are doing what they're doing, but they're like, you know them for...
Like, they carved out that.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I think that was the first time I got fucking burned by dry ice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Open up one. My dad got one from like a, work thing.
I do think that they're starting to get a few companies in their rearview mirror, like catching up to them.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But they're still the
kings. They were the standard bearer. Yeah.
Not saying taste. I'm just saying like they're known the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Absolutely.
First time, yes, you heard me. Second time, so I tried to. Tried to steal an ice cream from an ice cream man.
You did?
The bicycle one. Yeah.
Hey.
How old were you?
I was in like, I don't know, sixth grade.
You were a rambunctious child.
Did you ever hear the story?
Ice cream man was an asshole. He fucking punched my buddy's mom in the face.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe he deserved it.
It was Valentine. Yeah. Guy was fucking out a lot of Hiawatha Park for the rest of the fucking summer.
Damn.
Hey, Tom, did you ever hear the story of how Ed shit in the urinal in high school?
No.
As a
grammar school, seventh grade.
Okay, seventh grade. Still old enough to
messed up, Eddie.
Stealing ice cream, shitting in urinals.
It was a prank.
How'd that prank go? The janitor had to clean out your shit out of the urinal?
I cleaned it up. I've told the story. See, you can't even tell. He tries to frame me, and he just gets everything wrong, and he just folds the creases like shit.
Pot meat kettle.
At least I had deliberately do it wrong.
I deliberately did it wrong right there. You don't think I did?
No.
I knew the story. I've heard it 1,000 times. Of course, I'm going to make it so you sound even
Have
worse.
I told that story 1,000 times?
Yeah, I've heard you tell it a few times, yeah.
Are you talking about the time you saw OJ and took a shit?
Yeah.
I didn't take a shit, but I was in Isla Mirada, Florida. We're at this tiki bar with like palm fronds on the
roof. Do it, Dave.
And OJ Simpson walked in with his little crew singing. My dad and his buddy were all shit wasted.
Was that before or after he started an airplane?
Was it airplane?
It wasn't, but it never mind.
It was fucking what movie was it?
I think it was Airplane.
That was Naked Gun. No, it was Naked Gun and another one. Kareem
Abdul-Jabbar was
it. Abdul-Jabbar in Airplane. Yeah. Naked Gun, he was only in for like a minute. What was the other one? Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. There was another one. Maybe it was Naked Gun I was thinking of, but whatever. Nevertheless, my dad shook his hand and the moms all freaked out at their husbands.
No joke, I think I might have a cane sauce problem. I was at Raising Cane's the other day getting my box combo with extra sauce on the side like usual. I have an order. When I eat my Cane's, it goes crinkle cut fries, chicken fingers, the Texas toast, and finish strong with the slaw. So I start eating, and before I know it, I'm scraping the bottom of my sauce, and I wasn't even done with my fries yet. This habit is escalating, and I'm 100% here for it. Dip into Cane's. Get extra sauce for me, please.
What else you got, Ed?
I don't know. We talked a lot about the White Sox. Anything about the Chicago Cubs?
I heard they're getting killed right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, it's worth so. I mean, it's worth a ton of time. It's worth a little bit of time. It's however much you want to go. I feel bad for like Cubs fans that were optimistic to start the season because, you know, as you're starting to see, like, they're just not, you know, they can play competitive. They were going into the they played three games against the Cardinals. This is like, they're on an 8-game losing streak, but. It originated on a Saturday night. They had taken 2 out of 3 to start a 5-game series against the Cardinals. They had won like 14 of their last, you know, they're 14-13 over the last 27, 16-15 over the last 31, something like that. They drop 8 in a row, and you just see it just completely unravel. That doesn't hurt. And I don't suppose like, God, this isn't a silver lining. What's the right word for it? Fucking Baez is trash.
Yep.
Chris Bryant hasn't played that well. You know, Rockies aren't doing shit, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, Rizzo's done well in a superstar lineup with the shortest right. Like, I have to take away from his numbers. He's done well, and the Yankees are awesome, and I'm sure he's going to end up making more money than he did if he stayed here in Chicago or whatever. Like, that seems how – looks how it seems. But if they kept these guys, it would be so much worse. And now we're back to the Wilson Contreras stuff, and I haven't backed down from the not extending trade him. He's having the second best season from any catcher in the last 10 years. The other guy was Buster Posey, who's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So you're literally talking about, like, in the last 20 years, last 10 years, like a historic start to the season for a guy who should be traded to teams that are contenders. The Astros, Mets need catching. Like, there's plays here and people to extend him. Ugh.
He's just such lovable.
It's such a gap, though, man.
I know. But he's like, I understand it. It's like, he's like a connection to the past that was enjoyable, and he's still very lovable. So I can understand like the emotional connection, but it's just.
If they were good, I'd say give them all the money in the right. world. Like exactly. If they were still competing with the Brewers and the Cardinals, and you're like, yeah, dude, why would you get rid of this guy? Finding a good catcher is so hard. We were talking about third base. Like, dude, you can find it. I brought up Patrick Wisdom's been great since he got regular playing time, but like, who saw that coming? That's just an example of how. You know, you can find guys that can hit, and you can cover up some defense. You can't find somebody who can come and catch 140 games and put up a 140 OPS plus.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and he's 30.
Yeah. So, like, they say they sign him, they extend him, and then 2 years from now they're 2 games over 500 at the All-Star break, and he's fucking caught 350 games on this deal. And you're like, oh, we're going to be good. And then he starts to slow down. And you're like, what's your big weakness? It's like catching, and we pay him $24 million a year. That's what would happen.
Yep.
So if you're reading Jed's brain, you think there's no way.
If I'm reading Jed's brain, I'm going back to like 2018. And they're seeing Addison. They're seeing all the writing is on the wall. They're like, the pitching's not going to be there. The farm system's trash. They know what the free agency classes are. They know what their payroll is going to be. They saw these problems coming. They had to have seen these problems coming miles away. Because, and the more that I hear and learn, and the more you talk to people and stuff, they had to know in 2017 too that core wasn't going to be like a core. Like the stuff that Chris Bryant and guys want to like play or be around him, there is an element of truth to like, oh, okay, KB does his own thing. There is an element of truth to, like, Rizzo felt like he wasn't getting paid enough, and that rubs. There's an element of truth to a lot of the stuff out there. So if you're – it's just too easy to go back and be like, oh, man, I can't believe they didn't keep it. So the longer this goes on, the more I'm ready to let go, and the more I'm like, holy fuck, 2015, 16, 17 was just crazy, crazy. I wish I enjoyed it more at the time. It's funny, opposed to thinking about, like, man, well, then we got to do this so that we can – it's just like, just, I should have just shut the fuck up and enjoyed it.
It's funny you say that, too. You bring up the three players, obviously, and then, like, we talked about Madden earlier. He's another example of, like, hey, they were they were right on that too. Is there anything, obviously, from a opposite White Sox perspective, but, like, what do you think happened to him?
He had no idea it was coming. Like, the story goes, right, he gets the Mohawk.
Yeah.
But which is a bigger story, because it's kind of, like, funny and cheeky, like, oh man, he got a Mohawk, then got fired. But if you think about, like, the human element of Joe Maddon, like, going into that meeting with Art Moreno and be like, what do you mean I'm getting fired? Like, that is a – whether you're a manager getting paid millions, or you're working at Burger King, or you're, like, whatever, it doesn't matter. Losing your job and having it taken from you when you did not see it coming is obviously a terrible feeling.
Horrible.
Makes sense for the Angels to do it, though.
Yeah.
Because you have generational players in Trout and Ohtani. You have one of the best third basemen in his generation in Rendon. You've got these upcoming, like, position players that are, like, really clicking. Walsh and fucking Marsh and Taylor Ward. And, like, there's players that are clicking into this where you're not going to have to dip in a free agency. Like, they have a good core. And the problem with Joe is he comes in, he runs the team like it's his family. Like, he runs like a college football program. He is the top fucking dog. It all flows through him. The bullpen catcher is like, hey, I don't want to play golf on the road trip. Joe's like, I don't bring your clubs. Like, when we went out and played golf, it wasn't like we have a golf trip. It's like we go and play golf with Joe when he's on the road. What if you don't want to golf? Talking to Tim Bussey, he's like, what do you mean? If I don't want to golf, he's like, I don't want to golf. I'm on every fucking golf trip, man. We're on a bus out to Sugar Grove, Illinois. They have a game that night. But Joe wanted to play golf. So there's eight coaches, bullpen catcher. Now, there are guys who want to golf, right? But there's times you don't. And I'm just using this as a small example, because if it happens on a golf course, you think it happens with dinner, lunch, think it happens with off days. So I think there's this, when it works, it's great. You know, when it's great, it's going, because he's in charge. He takes responsibility. He's got everything going. Petting zoo, show up late. I don't give a fuck. I'll be in front of the media. I'll wear it. Don't you worry about it. But that shit fucking runs quick if you're
struggling.
Yep.
Sad. So I thank you for letting me get that. Joe is a very important part to Cubs. You know, I said that when he got fired, was like, you can't be like, huh, you know, or like, you should feel for that guy. He's a fucking good dude. But tough guy. I mean, he'll wear out his welcome anywhere. There's no play. I mean, he wore out his welcome with the Rays.
Yeah. Will he get another job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old is he now? 70?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think 68. I think he'll be in the booth this October. I think he'll probably enjoy some time for 2 months, play some. He'll get bored. He's so bored. Like, he'll be well,
for
so
being
he's
such one of those a free spirit. Guys, yeah. Like, it's crazy to me.
Now, let me ask you guys this. Do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
No.
Yeah.
He won one World Series
with the Chicago Cubs.
So what?
I think that matters.
You could have won a World Series managing that team. He almost blew that World Series for him.
Built the Rays?
He didn't build the Rays. Fucking Kyme Bloom built the Rays.
I don't do Hall of Famer talk, really. Like, I think, especially baseball, where nothing makes sense. But gun to head with no real research, just knowing that he won with the Cubs.
That's what I'm interested in. I'm not interested in you coming back and saying, hey, I looked at this.
As a very casual baseball fan the last 10 years, yeah.
He's probably top – I doubt he's top 100 in all-time wins. I don't know. It might be top 50. I have no idea. But, like, if I look back – 20, 30, 40 years from now, and I'm like, who are the best managers of that time? I'm thinking guys like Tito Francona.
Oh, for sure.
And Dusty Baker, even though Dusty, I'm not the biggest fan of. Bruce Bochy, I'm not thinking Joe Maddon, not in any way. And that's not because he won a World Series with the Cubs and I don't like the Cubs. It's because, I mean, it was a pretty quick shelf life. It was what? Eight, nine years.
He had a good decade, though. The 2010s.
Joe Maddon is 32nd in all-time wins.
He's not a Hall of Famer.
His win percentage has got to be pretty high, too.
No, we can look that up, too.
I think it's interesting, the knee jerk. Like, if you don't have to know a ton. I think if the Hall of Fame was based on building a brand for yourself, Joe Maddon's a first ballot.
Yeah, like here, also, too, I like notoriety and shit to me matters.
Because yeah, the voters
to those guys, yeah.
Yeah, it's a vote.
But 2010 to 20, like he was that decade, he was
the manager of the best teams, a couple of the best teams in baseball, yeah.
Yeah, but he was also like, if you said like,
if you don't managers, have the horses, you don't manage well.
I get it. And you also don't value the manager as much as
not really
other people though.
I think there are two or three really good managers in baseball, two or three really bad ones, including Tony La Russa, and the rest are all basically the same. If the White Sox today, how much managing did Tony La Russa do in that game? They won 13-0, 6, whatever the score was. He probably sat in the dugout and was like, all right, you're not calling bunts on, you're not calling hit and runs, you're not making pitching changes.
The better you can't team use is a 13-0 win to like.
That's exactly what I'm doing, though. If the better your team is, game to game to game to game,
the less you have to do.
The less you have to manage. So, like, I don't think the 2016 Cubs were a product of Joe Maddon. I think he was a product of the 2016 Cubs, including almost fucking blowing that game 7 when he pitched Chapman for like 12 innings.
Yeah, remember,
if he would have been the new Bartman if they would have lost that game.
Yeah,
there's some big egos in those clubhouses.
Remember the but remember like that to Dave's point, like how cash that Cubs run line was that year. You just like automatic Cubs -1.5, and you were just raking in money.
Oh, dude.
Like they were
the
killing
month of
everybody.
April,
yeah.
The month of April, I think they outscored opponents by like 65, 70 runs or something.
Yep.
Sad stuff for Joe Maddon, sad stuff for the North Side.
Are you salivating over the package that the Cubs can seemingly get for Contreras?
Well, if they do business with the Mets, yes. Like we got Pete Crow Armstrong. We got Pete Crow for Javi Baez. Javi Baez was such, and they already had Francisco Lindor. Like they have no catching, and they're good enough to win the World Series. The proposition last year was like, hey, you have Javi, you can go to the playoffs, you can, he'll carry you and be a spark plug. Mm-hmm. They're selling Wilson Contreras, being like, look, the only thing that's holding you back from being clear cut the best team in baseball is a good catcher, and we actually have, like, he's about as good as anybody's played the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Interested, Steve Cohen, and they say, "Steve, was make the deal." Who's their GM? What's his name?
Brody Van Wagenen.
Yes.
No, it's not.
It's not.
I just know that because I used to love when Frank the Tank used to.
It's not Omar Minaya.
No, it's not him either.
The GM will come in and say,
"It's not the pervert either,
Steve. We can't do this deal. You know, these guys. This is important." And Steve Cohen's going to be like, "Dude, I don't make that fucking deal right this instant."
Mm-hmm.
And so the Cubs, hopefully Jed's smart. I mean, of course he's smart enough. Hopefully the buttons are played.
What about this Francisco Alvarez cat they have that's knocking on the door that's the 13th best prospect in baseball?
He might come up in August, but the nice thing is you're not telling him to trade for Contreras and keep him around for 10 years. You're literally just saying, hey,
he's a free agent after this year?
Yeah. They do not
you
have
to trade him. You have to trade him.
The Mets,
I thought they had another year with them.
They don't have, like, they didn't go out, like, they've been hanging on to James McCann because of this prospect. Or my understanding is you don't want to make a long-term commitment to a catcher. So Wilson Contreras fits in well with them. And then the Astros, oh, I don't want to do business with the Astros. The Astros will just give you some fucking double-A reliever that'll pitch in 51 games a year for 6 years who's got, like, a funky cutter. You're not going to get anything that's, like, a consistent daily. The Astros are too smart.
We need the Mets. Come on in, Steve Cohen. Come on in.
I would like to do business with Clem.
That'd be great. I mean, it'd be like he'd be electric in the postseason. This year,
mm-hmm.
So it'd be great.
Yeah, I'd like to see him, Lindor. Although, to be fair, I don't think like that would be a blow to their pitching staff to have to throw to him.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been throwing to James McCann, man, you got to go throw to Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, can't do it.
Scherzer, you're gonna give Scherzer like 11 starts to get on the same page with Wilson Contreras. Several of those are going to go very poorly on that front.
Yeah.
There will be several of those starts where Scherzer is fucking brooding afterwards but won't say anything to anybody. It's like, why is Max mad? How many fucking times do I got to shake change?
Frank the Tank will be so mad.
Frank the Tank will hate Wilson Contreras.
Yeah. That's a lot.
So.
Whether you're tossing the ball around with buddies or picking off passes like a pro, Optimum Nutrition can help unlock more you. Tackle your recovery with Gold Standard 100% Whey, which has 24 grams of high-quality protein per serving and more than 15 delicious, easy-to-mix flavors. Put the world's number one to the test. Available at stores nationwide and online at OptimumNutrition.com. Euromonitor International Limited, Consumer Health 2023 edition, and custom research conducted February to March 2023. Retail sales of whey protein powder in 2022.
What's up with this DeBrinket rumors?
It's... Days are getting dark, guys. So I think it's the
absolute... Where are they getting better? Is like...
Yeah, no, I think I kind of like Contreras. I have come around to the idea that they almost have to trade him now. So trade him this summer, trade him before the draft. Again, like it comes down to execution of that deal and what it looks like. If they redo like a Panarin facade type thing, then they're fucking morons. But I don't think that. I think basically the roster's terrible and the farm system is worse. So DeBrinket's one of the only assets that they have right now that is of any value to anyone. And he's 24. He's got a year left on his deal at a very favorable contract. He would be an RFA. So whoever you trade him to would have exclusive negotiating rights. His qualifying offer next year for the Hawks or for anyone would be just a qualifying offer, $9 million. So it's a steep price for a team that has no aspirations of doing anything next year. The Hawks want to be bad next year. They want to be in you know, the lottery ball heaven looking at Connor Bedard's probably the best pure talent prospect since McDavid. He's phenomenal. So he's in that 2023 draft. So they want to be in that top two. There's another kid, Adam Fantilli, actually plays out in Geneva for the Chicago Steel. And he looks to me like an awful lot like a young Jonathan Toews. Like big, 6'3", fast. He probably has more like high-end skill than Toews. But like, you know, Bedard's more of a finesse guy where Fantilli is tough. So like if you remove 40 goals, which you would get from DeBrinket, and you turn that into the package that's rumored out there was from the Devils, who have the number two pick this year, who you're going to get a very good player you're going to put in your top six. And then they have these two prospects that are rumored to be in there plus. So if you look at that Hagel trade, where they got two NHL players in Kachuk and Radish, plus two first-round picks, that's like the starting point for DeBrinket. So you'd probably get a first-round pick or two, and one of them is going to be the second overall pick.
Do you believe that, though? Do you believe the second overall is on the table right now?
New Jersey has said it is.
Oh, really?
But yeah, so there hasn't been the last time.
For DeBrinket?
I mean, for anyone, they've said that they're, you know, they're kind of close. Like they finished last year pretty strong, and they spent pretty big last summer. They need like a legitimate top six wing to put next to Jack Hughes, and DeBrinket would look very nice next to him because Hughes can do a little bit of everything, but he's a great playmaker. And so similar, where you have like that Kane, Strome, DeBrinket, where DeBrinket just finds those soft areas, and those guys are smart enough to get him the puck in those areas. Jack Hughes can do similar things. So he would be very, like, plug him in there, chalk up 100 points for Hughes, 40 goals for DeBrinket. It's a great fit, and it might launch them into that playoff discussion because they're close, and they have a very strong farm system and young players anyways. So they're ascending. It's not like DeBrinket is Toews, where he's older and you're like, well, whatever. He's 24.
Yeah.
So you can be like, hey, and they have money. They got plenty of cap space, so they could sign. They could trade him, sign him long-term. And then they have like their foundation. The Devils are ready to, you know, push.
Just might make more sense rather than taking on another project.
Yeah.
A future.
Right. And if you're, you know, and they gave Dougie Hamilton, you know, all that money, and they have some, you know, they have some guys under contract, and like now would be the time for them, you know, where they can afford it and bake that into their cap equation. And by the time their other young guys that are currently on the roster are ready, the cap is going to go up. Like the cap should be up like a lot right now, but COVID really impacted that. So we have that ESPN Turner money in the system. It's going to really help the Devils when they have to pay some of the Boqvist brother, Jesper Bratt. They have all these like kind of solid, very young, solid core. And adding to Brinket is great. And if they can get, there's two prospects, I won't bore people with like who they are, but two forward prospects that I really like, plus the second overall pick, by the time you want to be good again, and it accelerates your rebuild if you're the Hawks, because it's like, well, you don't have a first round pick this year. And even though the first round's not great, they're still obviously going to be awesome players. You're looking at trading to Brinket and Hagel. You combine those two deals, you're looking at getting eight players. Probably that'll be on your NHL roster. That's a no-brainer. You have to do it, in my opinion. again, don't fuck it up like you did with like every, like that was the thing about the, you know, we had gotten this debate of like, how do you judge a trade in real time? It's like, well, if the logic is fucked, and the logic on that Panarin Versailles thing was always fucked. And I think that this, if you can turn DeBrinket, who is admittedly an awesome player, but a guy, you know, if your goal is to win the cup, DeBrinket gets you close to the playoffs. Getting three, four players you can plug into your top nine gets you closer to a cup. DeBrinket gets you closer to the playoffs. Yeah. So if you're trying, you got almost have to like hit rock bottom at the bottom of the pool and push yourself back up. And they want to be bad next year. And that's why, you know, I get people ask me like, who do you think the coach is going to be? I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I really don't. If it, you know, if they're turning Derek King into Ricky Renteria, I don't fucking care. Like, just play hard, try to have good habits, collect these assets. And in 2024, 2025, I think you'll start to see the fruits of that. So 2 years from now, when these guys are 19, 20, you're going to see it, and it'll feel like, you know, hopefully 06 again.
Seems like a 06. No-brainer, though. If you get that second pick,
yeah.
Are you all in?
I think so. If you get the second pick, and then you get Alexander Holtz is this prospect that I love for the Devils. Like, he's a winger, and they just don't have anything. Like, yeah. They don't have, like, if you look at guys, you're like, hey, like, he could be a part of a good team. You're hoping Doc turns it around, although he's been rumored in trades as well. And Reichel looks like a guy who can play in a top nine role, like a good winger, maybe center, but I think probably a winger. That's it. Like, there's nothing coming behind that, and they right currently don't have a first round pick this year. So they need young players. They need young forwards specifically. They're okay.
And quantity.
Yeah, and quality. They have nothing. Like, Rockford, mm-hmm. Rockford's best players and most impactful players this year up front are guys who've been pro hockey players for 10 years, like other than Reichel. So it's just like journeyman kind of guys who are hanging on trying to get a paycheck because they, you know.
What are the two picks from Tampa?
They get one at the first round in 2023.
Okay.
Which is better. You would hope Tampa at some point comes down. So you're picking, that pick should be anywhere, let's say 18 to 24, you would hope, but that probably in that range is probably a safe bet in 2023, which it's a very deep draft. Okay. And then they have one in 2024 as well. Okay. And you never know. Like, and they have, you know, they have other picks from other trades and like they traded Duncan Keith. That's actually something to watch out for too. Although I guess it doesn't matter. If Duncan Keith retires, all the cap penalties go to the Blackhawks. It's just like one of those weird salary cap recapture moves, but they're trying to be bad. So it's like, who, they don't fucking care if he retired. It's not like if this was 4 years ago.
It's catastrophic.
It's a disaster. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's catastrophic. So it just doesn't matter. Like, they're going to be intentionally bad. It's almost like when the White Sox were, you know, trying to go through their rebuild. And I think the quickest way back to the top is you got to get 3-4 players that'll help you down the line. Pick some players for to bring it.
Are you in favor of trading Doc at all, or do you?
I would still lean no.
What do you think he'd fetch?
I don't think that much.
Why not just see if he develops at that point?
I'm in that camp. So he's 21.
But it's hard to see how he's going to develop on a shit team.
More opportunity.
Yeah.
So, you know, and some of it is just not his fault. You know, like he was never supposed to be in the NHL at 18. Then he was probably, you know, he was good in the bubble. So you could say like he was ready for the NHL in the start of that second COVID season and broke his wrist. That's another lost year. And then it's like the team's a disaster with Carlton. That's another lost year. So if he has his head on straight, He still has all the raw talent that made him a top 10 pick to begin with. He also never should have been drafted third overall. Like, that was, like, you know, we talked about it, you know, Bo Byram, no matter what. Now you look at Colorado, Bo Byram, the guy that I wanted, he's had some concussion issues, but he has been awesome in the playoffs. Like, he looks like a legitimate, the fact that they're going to have Cale Makar and him for the next 10 years is just like disgusting. And, his whole narrative would be different if last year was his rookie year, which is what it probably should have been. And he wasn't the third overall pick. Like, if they didn't win, they won the lottery, so effectively moved up from like 12 to 3, something like that. If they had picked him at, let's say, 11 or 12, and then last year was his rookie year, and he put up, I think, I don't know what he had, 22 points or 30 points or something like that in 70 games, then everyone would be pretty high on him and feeling pretty, you know, like, hey, like, this is a piece of the future. He's not like, they were like, oh, he's Ryan Getzlaff. He's this. He's the next Jonathan Taves. He was never that. That was bullshit from the organization. Doesn't mean he can't still be a very good player. So you get, you know, you draft a center this year with that the number two pick. Then you get either Fantilli or Bedard next year. Now Doc's your third line center. He plays a good two-way game. He can get you 50 points. And you, now you're pretty deep up the middle. And all of a sudden, things are looking pretty good. And they actually are going to be in a position where they have to, I think if they trade DeBrincat, and there might be a ripple effect where it costs you Kane too. That's like the big downside for me. If Kane just comes, I'm like, hey, like I literally have nobody to play with. Then he's like, it might be better for both of us. I get traded, and that'll be a sad day for me. That would be a sad day for me, but it's just like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you'll see where you end up. But that's all the buzz is like, you know, the NHL season's winding down. The draft, I think, is like July 7th. So we're 2-3 weeks away. And it's they got to start getting assets, and the phone lines are buzzing. And, you know, if you're looking at guys that have a lot of value, DeBrincat's the only one. He's the only one.
My last question would be how bummed out are you? And I know you're okay with you know, you've defended him to death, Seth Jones, but
yeah.
I mean at some point that pick would have been nice this year.
I mean, realistically, that trade
is gonna go down as
I don't know if he'll go down as a bad trade. No. Because he's starting an 8-year deal now. So he'll still be here. He's still an awesome player, and I would say his deficiencies are in his game are the one thing I've talked about, transition defense, but he mitigates that with some of his length. But that trade did set the rebuild back like 5 years, mm-hmm. okay? Because what you gave up, now I don't give a fuck about Boqvist. I don't think you win with guys like that, but they would have had that 12th pick from last year, and that would have Mike Sillinger played the full year at 18 years old, and I knew heading in before that trade was made that was a guy that they had circled on their list. And he's power forward, big, mean. I think he'll probably be a perennial 30-goal scorer, top six, you know, winger, stud. They would have had him in the fold. Then they gave up their first-round pick this year, which is going to be the 6th overall. You're going to get another very good pick. So that whole trade with DeBrincat, maybe you don't do that. If you never pulled the trigger on the Seth Jones trade, because you don't need to acquire all these assets, because it's like, hey, we already have these two top guys.
And
it's a different situation. But long term, I think when they're good again, and it'll be like 4 years from now.
But you don't think there's a Contreras thing there where like, all right, when it's time for them to be good again, like Jones is going to take a shit?
No, I don't see, like he's 26. So like I don't see, so he'll be 30 when that deal comes up. I would say the other thing I was going to mention about him is that he's not like the most efficient player with his movement, but I don't think that's him. I think he's covering up for a lot of mistakes. So if he gets with a partner and in a system where it's not dragging him all over the ice and he's covering for this guy and covering for that forward, and it's just like they allow him to play a little bit more simple, I think he'll be better.
Different story.
Better defensively. And, you know, he'll play sometimes 30 minutes now. Imagine how effective he would be playing 30 minutes if he wasn't like dog ass tired from covering up for all these shit players and making mistakes over and over and over. He would be more efficient, and they'd be playing in the other end more, which is easier too. So I still don't hate the trade, but it's like you made that trade with the assumption that you were going to try to make the playoffs one last time with Taves and Kane and then blow it up. And he would have been an integral part of that, but you had the wrong coach and the team was fundamentally flawed and you had a couple injuries. But if your goal was to rebuild, well, yeah, like that trade set the rebuild back.
And there's no way he could be traded, right?
I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, if someone likes the deal and they think, I don't know.
I think it kind of goes, maybe not this summer because the cap's staying flat, but I think, you know, if they get to a point, you know, 2 years where people are like, hey, well, all of a sudden, $9.5 million for a number one defenseman, that doesn't look so bad.
6 years left.
Yeah. And he's at that point, he's 28. And I think that that's plausible. But again, at that point, if you're on the upswing at that point, because you've made these moves and you've acquired these young players, at that point, you need a guy to be your captain. That'll be Seth Jones. He'll be the next. If Taves and Kane are both gone, there's also, that's the other thing, there is. I've talked to people from multiple organizations now. There is no market for Jonathan Taves, even if they ate half the money.
Really?
Nothing.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Nothing. Like, I'm saying like a fifth round pick, but maybe not even that.
It's like sad to hear.
It is. So I think probably the best case scenario for the Hawks would be for him to come back and have a good year and then at the deadline be like, it's time to go. Yeah. Which again, it'll be another very sad day, but maybe he's ready for it. But it's like even if they wanted to trade him right now, they couldn't. So it's going to be a long year, but it feels like they actually have a plan for the first time since Dale Talon was a GM.
All right. So that's good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chief. We'll know more within 3 weeks. So
yeah, it'll be an interesting run here, but it's sad, but it's like the right moves, but it's sad.
Yeah.
Mark Lazarus said trading Alex DeBrincat would be short-sighted madness by the Blackhawks.
He's a moron. He's an absolute.
He's our Bob Nightingale.
Dingbag. Like,
well, Bob Nightingale's a nice dude.
And I also think,
yeah, no, like, I just, it's just, huh. we, I feel like every Lazarus, it's more about like, douche. You hear the name and you're like, negativity's coming.
Yeah.
But Bob Nightingale, negativity's coming. Lazarus.
Yeah. I also think, I think the other guy, Powers, I only read the headlines, but I think he, like, the next day took the opposite stance. So I think they're just like posturing, do you even believe anything you say? Oh, sorry. And so it's like, if you're listening to those guys, like, what the fuck are you doing? But I think it's not short sighted because if they could get DeBrincat to sign for $8 million a year, long term, sure, maybe you think about that, but he's not. He's going to get $10 million on the open market. His qualifying offer is $9 million. So it's just like, it just doesn't make sense. So you got to go get younger, cheaper, and hopefully better. And it could happen as soon as the Stanley Cup final is over.
All right, boys.
And I think the Avs win in six.
Enough to recommend people use the Barstool Sportsbook to wager on that.
I'm a little bit worried about the rest versus rust factor because they make pretty quick work of Edmonton. So I'm going to see if they've got legs. This is doesn't matter because this comes out tomorrow. Okay, but I'm going to wait until live, watch the first 5-10 minutes, and then probably back Colorado.
Buy some merch. 4th of July line is out there. Chief's wearing a shirt right there. He's got the hat on too.
Yep.
Make sure you go grab everything. Barstool Chicago Golf. Other 4th of July shit.
Like you're staying at like your buddy's like, hey, let's go to the pool, or like we're doing a pool day or something, and like you're like, oh fuck, I haven't been at a pool in forever. You're searching for don't be the guy who shows up basketball shorts, fucking Wheaton Warrenville South mesh, 2003 gym class edition. Get yourself some nice Barstool Chicago swimwear.
They are nice. They are genuinely like sweet. Those blue ones with the with
there's
the
three different pairs striping. Now we have that they're all cool.
They're all cool, but those blue ones are my favorite.
Are they? Yeah. I think I like the original best, but really? Those are nice too.
Yeah, the blue ones are my style. Yeah.
Do we have when we have lining in the trunks? Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take care of your balls.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's a nice product, guys.
I might go for a little dip in the lake.
No, you won't.
Out this weekend. Go some stuff this weekend for the College World Series. Follow us. Follow me. There will be some cool shit, but I will be back. I'll be back in the office next week. You guys do anything this weekend? Travel anywhere or do anything?
Father's Day.
Is that this weekend?
I think so.
Yeah, Father's Day. No, go check out the KFC radio show if you'd like. We got KFC coming up in a draft on Monday.
Yep.
Look out for that.
Oh, yeah.
I think
KFC went back to back.
Yeah.
Drafts. So, it was good. It's a good week with those guys.
All gas.
No breaks.
DJ, play that shit.